So last Sunday, if you're here for baptisms, hey, welcome. What a beautiful Sunday to see you here. And if this is your normal church, it's an honor to worship together again with you. Last Sunday, we looked at the life of Samson in the book of Judges. And in this season, we're going to get a little bit out of order. So we're going to go out of Judges. We're going to circle back in towards the end because there's some really great stories like Gideon and Deborah and Barak, and we're gonna get into them later. But for today, we're gonna get out of Judges and we're gonna get into this beautiful book called Ruth. It's only four chapters, but you can look at this book from just a multitude of angles. And so last week we studied Samson, inspired by the words, we ended with this understanding. So inspired by the words of C.S. Lewis, we shared how it is not proper for you and I, because we are not the author, so we're not the authority, we're not the author, nor are we the perfecter of our faith. That belongs to God. And so because we are not, the inspired word at the end of the message was, don't place a period in your life, in your story, where God has not stopped. If God has not finished working, don't you put a period there. And the book of Ruth highlights this truth as we see God at work in her life, and she's the outsider. So for those of you who have been going through, as we've been going through, particularly this year, seeing God at work, working out a story of redemption, particularly through the chosen people of Israel, your heart is like, yeah, but what about for the rest? Don't worry, we all get grafted in, but here's a beautiful story for you to anchor into as well. As the book of Ruth highlights the truth that we see God at work in the outsider during profoundly difficult periods in time. The story of Ruth takes place during the time of the judges. So when you're reading Judges and it says a judge rose up, everybody wasn't right in their own eyes, and it was just a mess, her story is in the midst of the mess. So the book of Ruth and her story is not in a time of peace, nor is it in a time of flourishing. Her story is actually found in a profoundly difficult time. Yet in her story, God is illustrating this deep redemptive work among life's unexpected twists and turns. I want everyone to say it's complicated. It's really complicated. And we want to look at what happens in the complications of life, in the unexpected twists and turns. There are invitations from God in those moments, and they're significant. Ruth exemplifies two things: covenant love and loyalty. This is her story. While experiencing famine, loss, even depression. And something I see in Ruth's book is how God's work of redemption often moves us, now watch this, it moves us from crisis to complication before we get to resolution. But we want God to take us from crisis to rescue. We want God to take us from here right away to there. So we want God to take us from the crisis perhaps that we're in or that we've experienced right the way to the resolution. But God brings us into these phases of complication for divine purposes. If I defined a crisis, I would do so this way. Sometimes we can be in a crisis because of our own foolish choices. That is the story of Samson. Sometimes our life is thrown into crisis, not by our own choices, but by somebody else's choices that profoundly affect our lives. And then the third way that you can define a crisis is life circumstances happen that are beyond your control. There are fires that rage in Los Angeles and county, and it creates a crisis for people that is beyond their control. This is how you can define crisis. And some crises are colossal as they have the combination of all three happening simultaneously. Okay? The book of Ruth is a book about all of these things colliding. In chapter one, you see the crisis. There's a famine in Moab. Well, sorry, there's a famine in Bethlehem. And so as a result of this famine in Bethlehem, a family moves out to Moab. And while they're in Moab, you get into chapters 2 and 3, you see a profound complication. So a crisis happens outside of their control. This family that was in Bethlehem is now in Moab. In Moab, you see a family who is Jewish marry, two sons marry these Moabite women. Their wives are Moabites. Yet within it, you see the death of a husband and then the death of two more husbands. So you have a famine that has driven a family from home. Now they're in a foreign place. And while they're in a foreign place, now you have simultaneous deaths that make now these three surviving women remarkably, remarkably vulnerable. In chapter 4, we're going to get to the resolution. Let's read in Ruth chapter 1, verses 1 to 5. In advance, there are some names in here that are hard for me to pronounce, so buckle up. If you would have told me, though, if you would have told this 5-year-old kid in speech therapy that he would be speaking publicly one day, I never would have believed you. But one of the residual elements is that is names are hard for me. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judea went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi. The name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there, but Elimelech and the husband of Naomi, he dies, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, not Oprah, and the name of the other Ruth. They lived there about 10 years, and both sons, you can read their names for yourself there, they died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. So remember, she is in a crisis first because of what she can't control, a famine. Now she's in a foreign land and she experiences simultaneous crises. She's lost her husband and she's lost her sons. Everything is outside of her control. Naomi is both a widow and a grieving parent who has lost her husband and her sons. She has two Moabite daughters, but neither of them are Jewish. And so here's the complication. A complication occurs in a crisis when life is not unfolding as we expected. Has anybody here ever gone through something where you're like, I did not expect this? I saw this going differently. I thought when I said yes to this, it meant that. I had no idea that saying yes to this would mean this. In fact, if I would have known then what I know now, I would have never said yes in the first place. This is the story. It's profound. It is riddled with real life loss and grief. Naomi, Orpah, and Ruth, they are mourning in Moab. And as women, as I've already mentioned, they are not just a little bit vulnerable, they are remarkably, remarkably vulnerable. And here's what I want you to know. God is at work. And here's the beautiful thing in Ruth, but also when we get to the book of Esther. God's name is not mentioned a lot in the book of Ruth, but it does not mean that he is not all over its pages. In the book of Esther, God's name is not going to be mentioned once, but he is fully present. And why do I say that here? And why will we say that again in Esther? Because when you are in a crisis that becomes complicated, the first thing you will struggle to see and to trust is that God, you are at work. This is the story of Ruth. God, I can't see it. I can't see what you're doing. But this is the story. God is at work leading from crisis to resolution. But before you can get to resolution, you have to go through a season of complication. And the season of complication is defined by God to refine you, to make you more like him, to trust him deeper. This is the season of complication. A few weeks ago, I put this illustration of this spiral that was up there. In crisis to complication, it can become a downward spiral in your life, yes, or it can become an invitation to learn and to trust God at a deeper level. And here's the thing, you may not get to choose the crisis or the complication that comes as a result of the crisis, but you do get to choose whether it is a downward spiral or a deeper trust in God. That alone is your choice. Nobody can take that from you. In Ruth chapter 1, verse 6, here's what it says. It says, then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return to the country from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and he had given them food. So in the opening chapters of the book of Ruth, there is a famine in Bethlehem, which brings her to Moab. And now in Moab, she's been there for over a decade, and she has experienced loss after loss after loss. And she is remarkably, remarkably vulnerable. Naomi is. She's remarkably vulnerable. And all Naomi can now think is she has heard in the fields of Moab that God has done something again in Bethlehem. I'm going to say it again. She has heard in the fields of Moab that God has done something in Bethlehem. I want you to think to the Christmas story. God does something in a field that others know something has happened in Bethlehem. God is at work in an extraordinary way here. In crisis, a wise decision is to return to what you know to be true about God rather than buy into the lie of what is untrue about him. You know, the Hebrew word for food here is translated as bread. Everyone say bread. Bread. Naomi is from Bethlehem. If you've been in church for any length of time, you want to know what Bethlehem stands for? House of bread. So think about it. She is from a place known as the house of bread, and yet she experiences a famine that draws her to a different place. And in a different place, she hears about this house of bread, that God is doing something once again in Bethlehem. Say, that sounds good. She's in a crisis. There's a famine that's pushed her out. She's experienced loss. So the best thing for Naomi to do is just head on back to Bethlehem, the house of bread. Okay, here's the problem. That's home for Naomi, not her daughters-in-law. They have never known Bethlehem. They're Moabites. And so now, turn the person beside you and say, it's complicated. It's complicated. Anybody here ever been a part of a family? Can I see your hands, please? It's what? It's complicated. If you're a parent or a grandparent, you know this intimately. What is sometimes good for you is not necessarily good for the entire family. Where you are is not yet where they are. It's complicated. When my kids were little, if I needed them to be where I was, it was very uncomplicated. Watch. We were at a store. They were being their age, but inappropriately. It was time to leave. This is how we left. Some of you are like, gentle parenting, don't do that. I was raised different. Like I wasn't, okay, this was gentle parenting. Some of you are like, you think, you know how I was raised? I know. We're in counseling together. We hear it. No jokes. I'm just saying. Different generations did things differently. So what was entirely appropriate when they were 2 and 3 is remarkably inappropriate at 23. You know, if I can't, wait, we're leaving, son. Let's go right now. Come on. Doesn't work that way. So here's Naomi, and she now thinks, I got to go back to Bethlehem. Except me going back to Bethlehem means more hardship for my Moabite daughters because they are not Israelites. I have rights back home. They have none. So not only will I bring them back to a place where they've experienced loss, but they're even going to be more destitute back here. Turn to some person beside you and say, it's complicated. You see, for Orpah and for Ruth, they're Moabites, so what is familiar to Naomi is remarkably unfamiliar to them. But Naomi longs to return home, but she doesn't want to further harm her daughters. And I want you to see this with both ears, and I want you to see it with both eyes, hear it with both ears, and experience it with your whole heart. Seeing no future in Bethlehem, this is Naomi. Naomi sees no future for them in Bethlehem. And so she does in her own wisdom what she believes is the most loving thing to do. She encourages them to leave her and to stay in Moab. She can see no future. She can see a resolution for herself. However, her love for her daughters complicates the situation, which leaves her uncertain about how God could possibly be at work in the midst of all of this pain. How, God, could you be working in the midst of all of this? If you were good, none of this would be happening. No, Naomi is in the fields of Moab, and she just hears about potential provision, and she can see enough to return to Bethlehem, but crisis and complication limits her vision to see how God may be at work. And this is not just Naomi's story, this is all of our story. That when you're in real crisis and real complication, sometimes it's hard to see how God is working. Sometimes on the other side, when you are in resolution, is the only time you can look back and connect the dots. But when you look forward, it's very hard to see, God, how could you be working in the midst of this? Yet he is working in such a beautiful way. In fact, it is precisely in the complication, the complicated space, where Ruth's loyalty, her understanding of covenant love, and it shines the brightest. And so Naomi says to her daughters-in-law, I'm going back here, but there's no future for you here. You stay here. You stay with your families of origin. I'm going back home. And Orpah says, sounds good to me. But Ruth says, and she says, this is Naomi talking now to Ruth, because Ruth is being obstinate. She says, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people. And watch what she says. Your God is now my God. This is, it's not in Christ, but it's this picture of salvation. One has gone back to their gods, their way of life, their understanding, but Ruth has faith in this moment, in the midst of the complication. By the way, Ruth has no future. She just has faith. Yet in the midst of her faith, she's not just placing her faith in Naomi. She is saying, the God who you serve is now the God that I serve. So where you go, I'm gonna go. Where you lodge, I'm gonna lodge. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. And may the Lord, not the small g gods, may Yahweh by name, may the God of Israel do to me more also, if anything but death parts me from you. Can you hear the language of covenant in Ruth's mouth? For death do us part. Loyalty. This understanding of not ooey-gooey, gushy, romantic love, but this deep-rooted, abiding, covenant love that is unshakable in the midst of the crisis and the complication. And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. Every parent understands that. I've said all I gotta say, and I can't say no more, because they either they're with me or they ain't listening. One of the two, she stops. In covenant relationship, we see Ruth holds to this deeper conviction. And another insightful understanding can also be found in verses 19 to 22 of the first chapter of Ruth. So when the two of them went on, they came to Bethlehem. They came to the house of bread. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, is this Naomi? She said to them, do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara. For the Almighty has dealt bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? She is in bitterness, but you know what I want you to see in Ruth chapter 1, Ruth chapter 2, Ruth chapter 3, and Ruth chapter 4. You know what is extraordinary is in complication, before there is resolution, we can correctly identify a circumstance, but incorrectly attach it to our identity. Nowhere in Ruth 1, 2, 3, or 4, nowhere in the story does anybody call Naomi Mara. Nowhere. Why? Because how she perceives God is at work is not how God is at work. And they give her the grace to go through an identity crisis without giving into it. They don't affirm it. It's this remarkable portion of the book of Ruth. Nowhere ever is she called Mara by anyone. In crisis, when life is complicated, how she thinks God is towards her is nothing like God is actually being toward her. It's remarkable. But she's caught in bitterness. Has anybody ever here been caught in bitterness before? Can I see your hands, please? I have both hands, both feet. In fact, when I rebelled, I didn't rebel into like drugs and alcohol. I rebelled into bitterness. And it's equally as destructive. It's no less destructive, and it's no less a rebellious choice. It just doesn't look like traditional rebellion, but it's rebellion nonetheless. There's nothing wrong with her expressing her heart to God. In fact, when we get to the Psalms, it's all David and all the psalmists expressing their laments towards God. But here's the thing, Naomi is not to be called Mara because Mara is her false identity. It's not who she is. So now they're back in Bethlehem. Ruth is still not Jewish, but we're about to meet an individual by the name of Boaz. But through Naomi, everyone say through Naomi, Ruth enjoys some rights as an Israelite. Here's what I want you to see. And here's why this is important. So now they are no longer in Moab. They are back in Bethlehem. They're in the house of bread. There's no longer a famine. There's bread in the house. Ruth is there because she understands loyalty and covenant love in a remarkable way. God is at work in the outsider. He's at work in the outsider. God is at work in ways that we cannot see. He's at work in the outsider. He's working a story of redemption that is larger than, by the way, any of them can see. They are in Bethlehem, but still, for Ruth, she's remarkably vulnerable. She's there by faith, driven by covenant love and loyalty, but she's really, really vulnerable. And here's what I want to say. In complication, when you're moving from crisis to resolution, you're in this complicated phase, look for God's provision, even if it doesn't meet the entire need. Look for God's provision, even if it doesn't meet the entire need. Like if you're in a relationship that's broken and you take a single step, it may not repair the whole relationship, but look for God's provision in the single step. Celebrate the single step. Before God gives you a career, sometimes he gives you a job. Before God makes you the leader one day, he'll put you under a leader that you don't want to be under. So you'll learn how not to lead. It is provision too. It's just complicated. Turn the person beside you and say, it's complicated. And then follow it up with, and I'm talking about my boss. It's complicated. Pause. Some of you in your stories right now, God has placed provision, but it's not enough for the whole dream. And so you're discounting that it's from God. Because you can't see it. Naomi is in Bethlehem. She's incredibly vulnerable. She is precisely where God needs her to be. Yet it doesn't meet the whole need. And now she meets a guy by the name of Boaz. In Ruth chapter 2, she is taken aback by how this guy named Boaz treats her. Boaz treats Ruth not according to status, but according to need. He charges the young man, like, don't touch her, leave her alone, to ensure that she is safe. And Ruth is remarkably puzzled as to why she has found favor with him. And then watch this. But Boaz answered her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. Sometimes what you do in the complicated season that you cannot see has future ramifications shows up in your future, and it's the very thing that God uses to unlock the next step in your purpose. She had no idea. She had no idea at work living with integrity was going to show up later. She had no idea. She had no idea not engaging this would affect something in her future. The book of Ruth can be seen on two perspectives. One, the people's perspective. And the second is, here's God, how he's writing this story of redemption. And your life has both things. It has what you can see, and then it has where God is at work. You and I want to learn to align with where God is at work. And we are all incredibly vulnerable, just like Ruth was, where in the complication, all we can see is this. And we are learning to trust God at a deeper level. You see, God was writing a story of redemption before Ruth could see God working, which brings us to the resolution moment in Ruth's story. Turn to the person beside you and say, I am so grateful for resolution. I love resolution too. I love it. Don't you love when its season ends? I promise you, in like less than 90 days, you'll be able to go outside with a coat again, without a coat. The polar vortex may last for a day, but spring comes in the morning, loved ones. The lake that is frozen, you will be swimming in it once again. Or the pool or the pond or the tub, I don't know, whatever you want to use there. A couple more thoughts as we close. Naomi tells her daughter something really specific when she's, now all of a sudden Naomi sees, what's Boaz doing over there with Ruth? And like any good mother-in-law, she's got ideas. Like any good mother, some of you are matchmakers extraordinaire. You may not have started match.com, but it was your idea. Some of you think you're good matchmakers and you need to stop it in Jesus' name. Open your eyes. Look at your track record. It's horrible. And some of you were deceived because you actually think you're the first and you're actually the latter. You need to come for prayer at the end of the service. Watch what she says to her, though. Ruth has lost her husband. She's been in mourning. She's been in grieving. It's been a time and a season. Watch what she says to her. Naomi says now to Ruth in chapter 3, verse 3, wash, therefore. That's also good advice for every junior high boy. Wash, therefore, anoint yourself and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. That's also good wisdom there. Here's why I say that. And I say this in love. What Naomi says to Ruth is essentially this: I'm not discounting the season of hardship, but you can be in a new geographic place, just like you can be in a different relationship, just like you can be in a different job, and you have not changed the mindset of an old season. You're still living with the same famine mindset, even though there's bread in the land. You're still living in the loss and not what God is about to provide. And Naomi knows enough to say to her, wash, anoint yourself, and put on your cloak. Essentially, she says to her, the season of mourning is over. You're in a new season. Dress accordingly. Loved ones, when you step into a new season, not this way, in who you are in Christ, you learn to dress accordingly. You do not live like the world because you are not of the world. You are in the world, but you are in Christ. So learn to dress accordingly. Wash, cleanse, anoint, put on is all New Testament language of us in Christ. The season of mourning is over. A new season is here. And to move from complication to resolution will require courage in the midst of uncertainty. you think feminism is a new idea? Ruth is going to propose to Boaz. As is custom, she finds Boaz asleep. That is not atypical of men. She uncovers his feet and she lays down. This takes tremendous courage. Pause. But Ruth has not seen this before, but she's been here before. She's been in uncertainty her whole life and had to be courageous. So while she's doing something new, what she learned in the complication is now showing up in the resolution. She's comfortable in the uncomfortable. She's comfortable in faith. She is comfortable in trust because of how she's learned to trust not the gods of Moab, but the God of Yahweh in the midst of the culture. At midnight, the man was startled and he turned over and behold, a woman lay at his feet and he said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." And he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first in that you have not gone after young men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman." The direct definition there is you are a Proverbs 31 woman. So for some of you who think Proverbs 31 women don't experience tragedy, loss, and brokenness, that it's all about perfection, allow this to reshape your understanding of it. "And now it is true that I am a redeemer and there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight in the morning. If he redeems you, good, let him do it. But if he's not willing to redeem, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning." So again, brother, uncle, cousin, close relative, anybody who is closer than Boaz is free to be a redeemer, but they are all unwilling. And so Boaz, chapter 4, verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. Verses 18 to 22. Now these are the generations of Perez. Listen to the story that God was writing. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Abinadab. Abinadab fathered Nashon. Nashon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David. Hundreds of years later, in a city called Bethlehem, the bread of life shows up in the house of bread. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, from the town of Nazareth to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was in the house and the lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed, who was with child. And while they were there, the time came for her to give birth, and she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. Loved ones, let God work his story of redemption in you from crisis to complication to resolution, because I promise you, he is writing something grander and greater than you can see. Trust deeper like Ruth.